Hello! Hello and welcome to Debatable, a live fake television show sponsored by Corona, where all of us have made as many threes as Steph Curry did tonight. What?
Congrats!
My brain's kind of broken a little bit. I'll admit.
It's been that way for a while, though.
My brain has been broken for a very long time. Spencer Hall, brain fully functional. Hello. Our co-pilot Dominique Foxworth, who is a little drunk,
What? First of all, what do you mean by co-pilot?
You know, like we do the show together. We sit next to each other, like all the time.
Feel
like we got something going here. We're proud of this.
We got something going, but let's be clear: Beyonce and you're Kelly. It's a hierarchy. It needs to be clear off the top.
As someone who recently Googled what Kelly Rowland's up to these days, I fully accept that compliment. Alabaster, what does that make you in all of this?
Honestly, I was trying to think of one of the Destiny Child members who got kicked out of the group, and I couldn't. It didn't come to me quick enough, so I'm just going to read the first question.
And that is why you are that person. Correct.
Yep. And so we had a weird basketball game tonight. We were ready to, you know, crown Steph Curry with this all-time great finals performance that he had through four games. He didn't have it tonight, but the Warriors won. And our question, what does it tell you that they won without a big Steph game?
Are we going there already? Are we already doing the thing where we call Steph Curry a choker and undermine every compliment that we just spent like days paying him? Because he did have like the worst game I can remember him having. In a game five of the NBA Finals. Yes, 7-for-22, 0-for-9. Mm-hmm. 0-for-bleeping-9. Yeah, 16 points, but the 0-for-9 thing. Yeah, I mean, we can talk about the many variables at play here, but it is insane that they won this game going away with him doing this.
Can we wrap it around to some KD slander? I think that's eventually the move you want to make here, right? That's your three... That's your three-step move here, Pablo, but I'll let you do that because this was the first game where I think everybody looked tired. This is the first like game of the finals where 100% this looked like dedicated professional players who were just on dead legs. There was only one man who looked truly alive and in preseason form, okay? Only someone who looked like they had just been on the beach for 3 months. Andrew Wiggins.
My God.
Andrew Wiggins. Finals MVP Andrew Wiggins.
Lazarus. Jesus. I mean, Dominique, like the fact that Andrew Wiggins is the answer to that description is absurd on like five different big picture levels, but what face is it? What are you doing? What face are you making? Why? What?
Oh, I believe that Fox.
Oh, of course. Great. Very good. Yeah. So Dominique Foxworth, the Beyonce of our group, is currently just gyrating in his... Yeah, just dance, Dominique. Just dance for us, because I'm going to do the Andrew Wiggins thing with Spencer here. Because, Spencer, like, Andrew Wiggins had... I mean, Alabaster, put up the stat card if you can while you're doing the tech support for Dominique here, because the game before this, he had 16 rebounds. Tonight, he had 26 points and 13 rebounds. And can you just imagine being a fan of the Minnesota Timberwolves right now, Spencer? Like somebody who lived with this guy as your number one overall pick, a guy that the owner of the T-Wolves had to sit down and tell, please don't make me regret paying you all this money. And spoiler alert, he regretted paying him all that money. That guy is on a trajectory that I don't remember anyone else having. Like, just the fury of being somebody who thought that Wiggins was one thing, and now, with the Warriors, of course, he is the opposite.
Yeah. This is exactly, by the way, how things work out for the Warriors. If you don't think they're, you know, they get everything mostly gift-wrapped to them by fortune, that they pick up Andrew Wiggins, and suddenly, in the game where everyone else has moments where they look very, very mortal, he's the guy who's the most consistent. And he's been astonishingly consistent across this entire series.
Yes.
He's been solid, for the technical term here, solid as hell. He has been reliable throughout the series. And tonight was a rock, right? The kind of rock he could have been for a franchise like the Minnesota Timberwolves if that franchise was not, in fact, built on some sort of ancient cursed ground. which yes. it evidently is. All right. Yes, but Andrew Wiggins has been awesome.
Wait, Alabaster, I have like 5,000 Andrew Wiggins takes here. So what do you want to jump in with?
So I want to talk, we'll definitely get to Wiggins in entirety, but I thought there was a fascinating aspect that goes beyond Wiggins and goes to all of the Warriors role players in this game. And that was a Celtics strategy, which was sort of not let Steph get off, but knowing that he was going to have his 40, he was going to have his 35, and you had to shut down the Jordan Pools, the Klay Thompsons, the Draymond Greens, and the Andrew Wigginses. And tonight was the opposite of that.
Yeah.
And I want to ask you guys quickly, like, is that formula feel like it's going to repeat itself? And are the Celtics sort of cooked if these role guys who we had once vaunted to be like this great strength in numbers team are back being that way?
I mean, do you really count on anything like this game happening again? I mean, the Andrew Wiggins thing feels sustainable. We'll get to him in a second here. I want to address what Alabaster is saying. But the idea that Steph is going to go 0 for everything from three and he's not going to be like at all himself. Oh my God. I mean, it just feels this
three.
Just it. There he is. There's Dominic Foxworth in my
back.
Ear. But this just was, it was, okay, Dominique.
In true Beyonce fashion, I made the fans wait for the reason why they came. They sat around and listened to Michelle and Kelly make noises until I can come out here with my bootylicious bootyliciousness and hit y'all with some great melodic tones about this game. It was weird. What were we talking about? Did you guys say all the important stuff?
Oh,
we're talking about right now. And boy, if I'm the person who has the lead on this whole thing, then we are cooked ourselves.
We're talking about how Alabaster has this take, right? Where, look, the Warriors did the inverse thing that we all expected them to do, that the Celtics expected them to do. Steph Curry was a zero. Everybody else ended up being the guys who came to his rescue.
I'm sorry to have to do this, but I thought that you would pick it up. I pretended to have technical difficulties because I wanted this show to be a microcosm for the game that we just watched. So I, the Steph Curry of this crew, decided to come out and miss all my threes. I wanted you guys, Andrew Wiggins, Jordan Poole, to come together and win the game without me. And then I could feel it. I could sense that you needed me to come in and rein in some threes. My man Draymond was killing all game long, putting up buckets, annoying people at the highest level. There was a certain point, I think it was like 4 minutes ago in the fourth quarter, when Draymond had more points than Steph Curry. I mean, not in the fourth quarter, in the second quarter. And I wanted to screenshot it, and then Steph Curry hit two quick shots. And I was like, oh. All right.
Yeah, so Spencer, what just happened here is that Dominique actually did the thing where he reveals which character he actually is, which player he actually is. It's just the player that he rejects, but is the player that he just named. He is Draymond Green. He fouled out immediately. He had some numbers. He was helpful, but more than anything, he was doing things where you were like, why is he following Jason Tatum into the huddle right now?
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
That was a great point.
Yeah, all the way over to the bench. I kept how far will he go? Will he just keep walking into the stands? Just going, just moving ever higher into the building. Yeah, this is what I believe Charles Barkley would call an impactful triple single for Draymond, except I think it's a quadruple single if we count as six fouls, which I will always count.
We should.
Because part of the production line for Draymond is fouls. This was just watching how they did it. It was sort of, you go, well, this looks like a Warriors team kind of scrapping things together like the Celtics sometimes do offensively. But the Celtics, in terms of bench production and in terms of the guys who were really there in game one, Al Horford had 9 points. Derek White had uno. He had the uno tonight, right? Grant Williams had three. These aren't guys you have, you know, you don't need them to carry your team, but you need them to get a little more production than that, right? No. I think if the Warriors are producing like they are off the bench, they have a problem.
The number, Dominique, the number I want to bring up here off of what Spencer was just saying, and I think this is the number that a lot of Celtics fans are actually most mad at. It is the number 18. Which is the number of turnovers that they had. And we know by now, right, the Celtics, when they get to that 16 threshold, they basically cannot win a basketball game. And this is very much in that pattern, of course. But 18 assists, 18 turnovers, and yeah, good luck, man. That's like the one thing we know about this team. Stop doing the thing your coach hates.
I do
the ball
like
over.
this idea of a series, one of the best things about it is we know the stakes before each game, and they do change after every game, but the stakes change for Steph Curry. Like before this series, it was like Steph Curry can put himself up there with guys like LeBron. And then yesterday, we all believed that Steph Curry was up there with guys like LeBron. And then he gave us a reason to believe he's not. And before this series even started, Jason Tatum, he's next. It's his league. Now this series has happened, and if Jason Tatum doesn't go for 35 and win in the next two games, he's going to be like, I don't know who the perfect analogy would be of a player, but it's going to be over his head as if he's bad. Like as if he's gotten worse. We're going to be talking about Jason Tatum and how he kind of, I don't know, like collapsed in the final. He hasn't had one good game yet. Not one. I mean, I guess we could give all those assists in game one was like a good one, but sure. He hasn't really had a true Jason Tatum game or like a memorable game that we're going to point to and say, that man really grew up in this year's playoffs.
Dominique, you're looking for like some sort of comparison point. I think the comparison point is in this series. Jason Tatum is worse than Andrew Wiggins right now. And that is true. That is objectively true. Andrew
That's
Wiggins, 24
compliment.
And 13.
I'm going to sell this as a positive. That's a compliment. Because Andrew Wiggins balling. Like absolutely killing it. So yeah. Maybe Tatum should try to be as productive and responsible. I feel like a teacher, right? Like, why won't you be more like Andrew? You should be like Andrew. He showed up on time. He hit his threes. Actually, Tatum hit his threes too. But yeah.
No, but what Andrew is doing, and this is where I think like many a teacher has retired having not solved this problem, right? How do you make someone try when they have a long, years-long record of not trying? And I think, you know, maybe that sounds harsh to people who are just sort of watching Wiggins now and they don't really remember what he was like in Minnesota. But this is one of the most athletic people in the league who was literally like one of the five worst rebounders at his position. He wouldn't do it. And now he is doing it all the time. And I'm trying to think of like what movie is it like She's All That or like someone took off the glasses and it's like, whoa, this girl is the prettiest girl I've ever seen. Like, I don't know what the metaphor is cinematically for the transformation that Wiggins is undergoing, but I feel for T-Wolves fans. I return to that. Like, you guys, my God, this sucks for you.
Do you feel for them or do you blame their organization? That's gone too far. But to my point about the stakes, it's like, this is huge for Andrew Wiggins. He's not going to go down as a bust because of the two big games that he's had in this series, this one in particular. It's like a pivotal game. I think it's like more than 70% of the time the team who wins game five wins the finals or wins the series. He was the best player in the like most pivotal game of this series, unless we get a game seven at some point. That is huge. And it wasn't just on – I think this is the most reasonable knock against Steph Curry is that he's kind of one side. Like, he's not a defensive liability in the way that Jordan Poole is, but he's not a defensive stopper. Andrew Wiggins was, like, their best offensive player. And also, giving Jason Tatum the blues.
Yes.
He's airballing shots. Yeah. He's complaining to the refs. Like, this was a kind of – A1 superstar caliber game that Andrew Wiggins gave to us in the most important game in the finals. Can he do it again? Can he do it multiple times? Probably not. But this is the type of thing that you want to see out of Jason Tatum, except not against Jason Tatum.
Alabaster is climbing into the ring because he heard something. What did you hear, Alabaster?
Well, I have a follow-up here on this, and this is not to take away from our beloved savior, Andrew Wiggins, but should the Warriors ever feel more light years ahead than they do right now by rehabilitating Andrew Wiggins from someone who had no motor, who didn't rebound, who didn't play defense, who took contested mid-range shots, and have turned him into an aggressive, gritty player and bridged the present to the future with someone off of the scrap heap, and in that transaction got the first round pick that turned into Jonathan Kuminga?
It's one thing. Spencer said some version of this earlier, but it is one thing to be a billionaire who has everything. It is another thing to be a billionaire who has everything and is also very lucky. And that is infuriating because that's what the Warriors have. They have incredible timing. They've benefited from incredible luck on top of a player development program and a culture, clearly, with Steph as the actual culture that I refer to, that makes people want to play this hard.
I have something to share, by the way, from Jason Tatum's actual Twitter timeline. Some would say it was unfair to pull a 10-year-old tweet, especially on someone as young as Jason Tatum. I would agree, and I'm about to do it anyway. I'm going to read it to you. You ready? From Jason Tatum. This is his verified account.
10 years ago, so he's like a teenager. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
14? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You ready? Jabari Parker is better than Andrew Wiggins. It's a typo. It's not better than. It's better the Andrew Wiggins. Andrew Wiggins. Am I going to judge a young man for making such a rash statement at a time when it is ironic that he should have ever said this? No, I'm not. Am I going to mention it because it's funny? Absolutely. So thank you, Twitter. You delight.
I think you're a bit delusional if you believe that light years ahead, that somehow Andrew Wiggins is the bridge to the future. Unless you're calling Andrew mm-hmm. Wiggins the bridge from the previous dynasty to this current dynasty.
Yeah, definitely.
I might get on board with that, but he's not the future. Because part of this, we're talking about this great rehabilitation. Did they rehabilitate him, or did they just give him less responsibility? Like, doing this once every month or so? Yeah, I think there's a lot of players that could do that. Doing this every single game throughout the entire playoffs, it's like, I don't know. I guess watching him play hard is a testament to them in that culture or something. But I think it's easy to play hard when you have something to play for. And it's also hard to put up the type of numbers and the aggressiveness and physicality and the competitiveness if you are the guy every night. He didn't have that bone or gene or whatever we're going to call it now. He didn't have it. And the Warriors didn't give it to him. They just told him, you don't need it here.
But there is, you know, there is a category of player, because Draymond Green, Steve Kerr once told Draymond this specifically. He said, you are one of the worst bad team players I have ever seen. Like, there are players on bad teams who should not be on those teams because they're not going to mm-hmm. help. They're going to give up. They're not going to try because they know that this is futile, right? But a great mm-hmm. player can sometimes be found inside of the body of a bad team player if you're on a actually great team. And yeah, does that sort of lessen our estimation of Andrew Wiggins in totality? Sure. But he does become the ultimate luxury item for a team that, yes, has light years worth of luxuries at this point.
Hey, let's say something about the kind of guys who run way harder when they see the finish line, okay? They're great closers. And in a team environment, they really help at times like this. Do they help in, like, you know, mid-season? Not necessarily. Do they help when things are going badly? No. Was that my cat?
That I like to think that that was your prehensile tail. Absolutely.
That was your tail. That was definitely your tail. Yes.
But I mean, yeah, guys like this, that motivation, it may not be consistent throughout the season. Right now, powerful, especially when the prospect of future earnings against this. And yeah, he turned 27, by the way. That's law school age. That's when you go, I don't know if this is working out. Yep. Maybe I should go to law school. Things get scary. You start trying a little harder. Yeah.
It's perfect. We should talk about Klay Thompson a little bit. Because if Klay Thompson was a normal human being, there might be a tinge of jealousy. Because he actually, like, he was rough early on, but then he hit some really important big shots that he hadn't been able to hit so far in this series. But tomorrow, ain't nobody going to be talking about that. We're all going to be talking about how Wiggins stood up and how Poole made that shot before the buzzer and how they all came together to help Steph Curry when Steph Curry was down. But Klay, I don't know how many points he had, but this was the best Klay that I've seen far in the playoffs, I feel like. Or agreed. At least in these big games.
Yeah, no, to me, yeah. What do you have, Alabaster?
So I do think Klay Thompson deserves a little bit of flowers for his defense at the end of game four when he shut down Jaylen Brown on like four straight possessions to end the game, because we didn't think Klay Thompson still had that. But to your earlier point, Dominique, I might need the body language doctor for a second. It kind of sometimes looks like Klay Thompson is a little bit sick of the entire Jordan Poole experience.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
When he takes that 2-for-1 40-footer and Klay throws his hands up in the air, there might be a tinge of like, get this guy off the court. That's my shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Dominique said that Clay was hitting shots that, you know, Steph wasn't making, that other people weren't. Nobody on the Warriors, I believe they had missed 14 threes in a row when Clay Thompson arrived with his one-man bailout package. And it was like he defibrillated the Warriors offense for a while. And the idea that Clay was the best vibes in the NBA is watching Jordan Poole and is like, yo, this dude has too much heat check in him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's about right.
You were talking about players who were going to be bad team players. There's an alternate reality where somewhere Jordan Poole is on a bad team and he is like in near Dion Waiters territory. There's some alternate reality where he's hoisting up like way too many shots a game, right? Just like that. It's entertaining to me. The only thing more entertaining is him consistently irritating Clay. Like that is a joy to watch for me.
Yeah, Clay seems like he can't be annoyed, but Jordan Poole. He's the one guy that knows, like, he's fake Steph, wannabe Clay. He's out there, and Clay's like, just gets under his skin. It's the imitation part, I think, that really bothers him. This Splash Brother, like, he's had a couple good weeks. It's a pretty good season, some good playoff games, and now he's a third Splash Brother. We're calling a whole lineup a pool party? Yeah. That would bother me.
Yeah, Klay Thompson has like suddenly like middle child syndrome. He's like, wait a minute, why am I? I used to be the other guy, and now I'm relegated to somebody who is the third wheel. Alabaster. Speaking of somebody who knows the feeling of being boxed out of a dynamic, where do you want?
So, guys, I want to pivot to the Celtics end of this because this has been a story of the playoffs that they're the ultimate Jekyll and Hyde team. And the question that I initially had written out for the show was, do you expect the Celtics offense to bounce back in game 6? I don't think that's the right question, so we changed it on the fly. Here's the question I have for you guys leaving this game. Are the Celtics the weirdest team you've ever seen?
They're real weird.
They're real weird. Yeah, I mean, they have a defense that is like one of the best of its generation, except on days when they hold Steph Curry scoreless from three, but get absolutely cooked by Andrew Wiggins and Jordan Poole. Yeah, pretty weird. Pretty weird. They're a team that is incredibly well coached. They're a team that has gone through incredible fragmentation during a season in which they have been two different teams. The worst, one of the more mediocre teams in the first half, and then the clock strikes New Year's and they become the best team, and they can't stop turning the ball over despite all of that stuff.
The confusing part and the weird part is that they turn into that old team in every single game that they play. At some point, that beginning of the year Celtic team, they show up for a stretch. And most of the time it's in the third quarter. Sometimes it's in the fourth quarter. Sometimes at the start of games. Like, we're starting NBA Finals game one. It's like, who's this team? And it just doesn't make any sense, particularly on the offensive end, where it just seems like they forget everything about offense. And I'm listening to Van Gundy tell them, like, teach them through his microphone, reteach them how they play. And he's yelling for them to do the things that we all think that they're supposed to do. And they just don't do it. And is it age, experience? I don't get it. It doesn't make sense. I'm glad I don't have money on them. I'm glad I'm not a fan of theirs, because it frustrates me and I don't care.
I sometimes don't really know who's supposed to do what offensively. You know, I don't. There's certain lineups that work real well, right? If they got one big on the floor, that seemed to work a little bit better for a while. And then they just decide to not work that way. It's baffling to watch them because I'm not sure who's supposed to, like, who does their offense run through?
Well,
it's mostly Jason Tatum.
No, Spencer, it's a good question, because it is supposed to be mostly Jason Tatum, but there are moments where the Jason Tatum that it's supposed to mostly run through disappears and it was replaced by another Jason Tatum who is just helpless offensively and looks like he's lost all confidence. And that's what we saw at the end of this game, right? You had 10 of 20 from the field, 1 of 5 in the fourth quarter.
It was very sad. Like, I felt myself feeling sad for Jason Tatum because he seemed like he wanted it really badly, but there was nothing he could do about it. But he also, his brain would not tell his body to do the things that he normally does well, but he also really wanted to do well. It just was very confusing. And their, like, Jekyll and Hyde act, that's a good analogy for it. But it made me think of one of my friends from college who was like, the coolest white boy you ever would meet. And then when he got angry, it's just a lot of fricks and frickety fracks. It's just like all the cool mm-hmm. washed off him. And I feel like that's the same thing where like it's still in there. Like, I know where you from. You just because you got here to college around the football players, I still know who you are, Celtics. You are the Celtics mm-hmm. from the beginning of the season. No matter if you take your glasses off and let your hair down, you're still a nerd. Still a nerd.
But it just feels like too. They don't embrace if they're going to be that team that's still just inwardly a nerd, right? Then play nerd ball, right? Like have a system. Stick yeah. with it. They don't do that. It just doesn't feel like they have anything systematic. The team that does that kind of stuff is on the other side of the court, right? They're on the other end of the court. That's the Warriors who, even when they have a game like this, where their show pony goes cold from three and they can't do that thing where they just pry the top off of the arena in the third quarter and blow them out, they still manage to scrap together production. And that's the one thing that, like, you know, in my Neanderthal basketball opinion that made me really like the Warriors is that over a 7-game series, they're going to figure out how to score and move the ball no matter what. I know everyone touted the Celtics as being like the end-all be-all defensive basketball, and they might, but they also play another end of the game. There's a whole other half of the game that is baffling. And that, to me, was the thing that really made the Warriors the obvious pick for me. I mean, that's...
Are you celebrating already? Are you taking a victory lap? We got two
games
left. Oh,
no. You said
it. Dominique,
our reality extends exactly 5 minutes into the future. Right now, I'm right. You know that. I'm right. I'll go ahead and take that victory lap because no one's going to remember this tomorrow.
You're so right. Oh, you weren't right at the beginning of the fourth quarter. And then you got...
That's absolutely correct. And then I got
right. Now he's right.
You got so right.
Yeah.
So Alabaster.
Yeah,
I got a follow up for you guys. Since this is the weirdest team ever, what would surprise you more, if the Celtics won Game 6 and Game 7 because they're weird, or they just lost the next game by 30 points?
So I
think the 30 point loss would surprise me more.
The 30 point loss would surprise me because if they do lose by 30, we really have to. Speaking of times we were right and then turned out to be wrong, we're gonna have to really burn some tape of us praising Ime Udoka. Like we went out and we were like, this guy has been cursing his way to a championship. He has figured out motivation. He knows how to unlock these guys. And if they just get blown out because it turns out they've all given up essentially because they've realized how weird they are and how much they are actually ill-equipped to handle a Warriors team that can beat you without Steph. Like, yeah, that's an issue.
This is the worst thing about what we do though. It's like, like this, because you're right. That's what's going to happen. The end of this series is like, it feels like the Warriors will be fine no matter how this series ends. Maybe we'll jump on Steph about not being able to close it. But depending on how this series ends, it's really going to change the way we talk about the Celtics, the way we treat Jason Tatum and Ime Udoka, which like is completely unfair. Like to me, it feels like I do the dishes every night. For 10 years. And then one night I don't do the dishes. And then somebody's like, lazy ass ain't do the dishes. Like, I can't.
Purely hypothetically, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, hypothetically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would never do the dishes. That's what dishwashers are for.
I'm so glad you said dishwashers.
The boxes.
And not another person who lives in your house. Yeah.
Oh, exactly. No. Oh, nobody in my house actually washes dishes. If anyone does, it's me. It's a whole other ball of yarn. Trying to get me in trouble at midnight. Relax, Pablo.
Go ahead,
Spencer.
Just a baffling team that, by the way, like the 30-point loss would surprise me more because what's the one constant here? They play really hard.
Yeah.
Like they play really hard and the effort is consistent and they're tenacious. It's just not always tenacity going in the right direction. Right? Like sometimes it's driving so hard you take the whole car off the road. That's sometimes what their offense feels like, that like when they're careless, they're trying to make something happen, right? They are trying to do the thing, and it just doesn't work. That part's confusing to me, but like the effort, I would be baffled if they lost by 30, that to me. But I wouldn't be surprised by much because they are strange.
I got to come back and fix my analogy. The real analogy is infidelity because that's how we act. We act like they have been faithful to us for 15 years, and then they cheated, which, like, the reaction at that point seems appropriate. It's like, oh, all of a sudden, one cheat? However, I would like someone to make that argument. Like, it ain't going to be me.
Purely hypothetically. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No. If I was that person, you know what I wouldn't be doing? Talking about it on television right now, or fake television right now. But I would like to hear somebody make that argument, like, hey, 15 years strong.
Look at the numbers.
Are we having a red table conversation about politics? Is that what you are doing?
Oh man,
that's what we're doing.
Yeah, the three of us, the red table talking it.
Oh my god, I was gonna say who's the guy that we cheat with? What's that guy's name?
August Alsina.
August Alsina. No, dude.
Okay, well, let's focus on a different couple. I have one last thing to show you guys.
We got a minute left,
and I want to show you my my favorite highlight from tonight's game.
Yes.
What are the chances this guy's wife saw these high fives? And we have a clip for you to react to.
One hundred percent.
God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Poor guy. He's
I'm going not only 100, but I'm going a 100% chance also that she has told him before to stop high-tenning me.
Yeah, she definitely has. And she's regretting sharing her tickets with him. I'm not sure that they're married like that. I'm 100% sure that they're married, but how that went down.
I was going to say, no. She is sick of this. This is experience, because there's a tantalizing possibility. You're like, this guy's wife saw those high fives. And I'm like, was the wife watching on TV? That's the question, like the way it's phrased. I'm going to go 100%. That is a familiar and strategic shutdown on her part. Well done.
I mean, yeah, that's a good dog, but I was going dark. My next comment was taking it to a real bad place.
Wait. Bring us a dark comment sponsored by Corona. Nope. What do you got?
Nope. The bell snatched me out of it and was like, nah, that's a bad idea. I'll text it to you.
Okay. You're saying maybe there was an August Alsina in their past? Is that what you're saying? She got some high tens and they were never the same?
Hey, listen, respect for the man for taking the L quick, though. He had him up.
Yeah, he did.
Popped him back down.
But everyone knows you got to high five yourself at that point.
Yeah, no.